All right. Hi, everybody. It's RCFB Talk 74. We're happy to have you join us this morning. My name is Bobak Hayeri. We're joined by my normal co-hosts, J.D. Moore and Sirius. And we're going to be joined by Sunbelt Commissioner Keith Gill. And it looks like we've got everyone up here. Commissioner, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's great to be with you.
Absolutely. So first things first, we'd love to ask, what was last Saturday like for you? How are you keeping track of all of these games?
Yeah, it was incredible. It was interesting. So I was in San Antonio originally. I was on my way to San Marcos. And so I watched I started out watching South Alabama versus Central Michigan and then Georgia State versus University of North Carolina. And then when those games ended, then obviously I turned on Marshall, Notre Dame, and then App and Texas A&M. And so I got through about the first half of each one of those games, and I had to drive to San Marcos. So I had the Texas A&M game on the radio of the car. So total old school on the Aggie radio network since I was in Texas. And then I had my brother-in-law on the phone giving me the updates from the Marshall Notre Dame game. So it was a little disjointed as I was driving to San Marcos, but I was still excited nonetheless.
Absolutely. And you try to visit all the campuses during the season, correct?
Yes. Yeah. So that's how I set my first schedule back in the spring, is I'm trying to get to all 14 campuses for at least one home game. And then I try to see all of our teams twice live. You know, that's kind of how I build it. So, and the interesting thing is, originally the FIU-Texas State game was scheduled for Friday night. So it was going to be perfect. I was going to go there Friday night. It's only 2 hours to College Station from San Marcos. And then I was going to go to the App game. But they moved the Texas State game to Saturday. They moved it to Saturday. And so since that was my campus visit, I ended up going there instead of going to see App.
Just as a reminder to those listening who may not realize this, obviously last weekend was the huge set of upsets, the three big upsets. But that isn't the first time the Sun Belt did that. In September 12, 2020, you know, the opening week of that kind of odd season, though, the Sun Belt upset three Big 12 programs on the road. I mean, Arkansas State beat K-State, Louisiana beat Iowa State, and Coastal went and won at Kansas. This has been, been watching the Sun Belt rise.
Yeah, no question. You know, I mean, and that's what's exciting about this is, you know, it allows us to show the nation what we all already know, which is the Sun Belt plays good football. You know, we've been doing this for a long time. Obviously, App's been doing it for a long time. If you even go back to week one of this season, you know, ODU beat Virginia Tech. So, you know, we're not scared of anyone. We're willing to play everyone, and we have a fair amount of success when we do.
So tell us more about the strength of this new Sun Belt. And I know you guys have approached, you know, especially when we see all of these moves by other conferences to being coast to coast, I should say. The Sun Belt's really dug in deep in a way to kind of create a sort of depth, a quality of depth. Could you talk about that?
Yeah, I really credit our presidents, chancellors and ADs, you know, just really kind of with the thought of we wanted to have really good football programs, really like-minded institutions, really passionate fan bases, but with a really strong regional kind of framework. So that way, it'd be easy for fans to travel to games. It'd be easy for our teams to travel to the games. And the fans will have, you know, knowledge of those teams. You know, there's a lot of history between App and Marshall. There's a lot of history between, you know, App and JMU. And there's a lot of history between Southern Miss and Louisiana. And so that has really energized our fan base in a way. You know, our attendance is up, and in a place where it's down in a lot of places across the country, our attendance is going up. Our fans are really excited, and our football, you know, we added really quality football programs to an already quality football league. And so these results in week two and also in week one really kind of demonstrate that.
You've also kind of seen that in conference realignment in the last couple of years as well, seeing James Madison and all these other programs that have joined the Sun Belt. Is that the continued business model going forward, trying to stay regional, trying to stay with those passionate fan bases while we're seeing, you know, situations like the Big Ten is taking in USC and UCLA, where it might not necessarily be in the regional area, but they're trying to bring in added value. What's kind of the Sun Belt's outlook when it comes to that type of realignment and looking for who's going to be a good partner with the Sun Belt?
Yeah, you know, I think for us, you know, we are always going to evaluate based on the framework I gave you. That regional piece is really important. That strong football kind of tradition and kind of current success is going to be really important. We want to have passionate fan bases just because that brings great atmosphere, whether it's in the stadium or on TV. And then we want to have like-minded institutions. So that's really important for us. You know, I mean, you think about one of the things that we're continuing to do is we're still in divisions. You know, when you look across FBS, a lot of FBS is getting away from divisions as they kind of prepare for what they think puts them in the best position to for the CFP. But for us, you know, we're doubling down on divisions. We're doubling down on the regional aspect of our league, because we really think for us, that's what's really important and valuable. And I would say, you know, these first couple weeks demonstrate that.
Commissioner, I think that for a lot of us who are fans of college football, the Sun Belt's kind of become a bit of a favorite when it comes to conferences that we may not have an actual connection with the member schools themselves. And I think a large part of that is because your conference has really moved to embrace the whole Fun Belt moniker in terms of putting out intriguing matchups that fit time slots that we all get to see, because you're, you know, willing to be flexible on scheduling in addition to trying to find some of these premier slots against some P5 teams like we had this past weekend. They get you on national television on Saturday as well, but also things like, you know, the MVP actually being a belt for the Sun Belt, things like that. You know, what have you done since you've joined the conference to try to, you know, help embrace that and keep that going to make it, you know, very much a fun conference that gives us entertaining football, but also sets yourself apart from some of these other conferences?
You know, one of the things I try to do is put the MVP belt on every day. So it's always fun wearing a, you know, a WWE type wrestling championship belt. So, but no,
was that a perk that they told you about, you know, when you were applying for the position, would be that you could have, you know, daily access to the fun to the MVP belt?
I mean it's I do think we embrace just trying to have a good time. You know, I mean, I think even our conference office is a work hard, play hard mentality, and it's have a lot of fun, and so we do try to take ourselves seriously, but not too seriously. And I think, you know, we do want to play intriguing matchups. That's really important. We do feel like we have a lot of intra-conference matchups that are going to be really intriguing. You know, you think about, you know, App and Marshall play on November 13th. So now it's week two. There's a lot of football left to be played. But, you know, if you kind of project out, that could be one of the best matchups, you know, of the whole year when those two teams meet in Huntington. So I do think we are, you know, trying to do this in a way that's fun, in a way that brings in fans, in a way that is exciting. And so we certainly do our best. And I do think the MVP belt is a nice kind of metaphor, you know, for what we're trying to do, you know, for FBS football.
Fan response has been pretty strong to these new additions. I know when they were polling, I believe The Athletic did a poll on some of what fans were thinking of the realignment, and I know Sunbelt fans seem to have the strongest in favor of how their conference had changed. Because you've added, you know, we know the chance of some of these teams, like we are Marshall, you know, Southern Miss to the top. Obviously, James Madison was an FCS, you know, dynamo, and Old Dominion. How, from your perspective, has that been encouraging to see these responses?
Yeah, no, I think it's been very encouraging. You know, I'm really excited about how energized our fans and our membership are. You know, it's nice when they're kind of embracing what you do, because it's validation that, you know, we're kind of on the right track in terms of how to engage them. Because at the end of the day, you know, we're trying to do a couple things. You know, we're trying to graduate and educate students. We're trying to give students the opportunity to win championships. And we're trying to engage our fan bases in ways that that they believe are meaningful. And so on the latter, you know, it does seem like, you know, we're kind of on the right track. And we want to keep doing that. Now, playing winning football always helps, you know. So weekends like Saturday certainly allow us to, you know, really get our fans energized, you know, because they can see what our league is doing and can do. And you know, you go win at College Station, you go win at Notre Dame, you go win in Lincoln at Nebraska, you know, those are three pretty impressive wins. And then you beat Virginia Tech in week one. And obviously both App and Georgia State were close to beating UNC. So, you know, and then last Saturday, we won 10 games last Saturday, you know, I mean, so we 10-4, which we would take that, you know, on Friday, if someone says, hey, look, you don't have to play any games, we're just going to give you 10-4. I would take that all the time. So it's been a great start to the season for us, and I'm glad our fans are excited, And we hopefully, you know, we'll keep doing it, keep doing these types of things that energize them.
In terms of these intriguing matchups, and, you know, obviously there was some flexibility that you had to have during the 2020 season, especially, what's been your role in kind of guiding this? Because we know that the schools have a lot of autonomy, but are you able to kind of, you know, help grease the wheels along or provide some suggestions in order to help the member schools get the absolute most out of the season as possible in terms of scheduling, whether that's, you know, conference matchups, because everybody's looking at that App State Marshall game now and is really excited to see how that's going to play out, but also some of these non-conference games as well.
Yeah, you know, so the non-conference is mostly the schools. So they manage that. From the conference office, we have a scheduling philosophy that we're always talking to our schools about. We're trying to give them suggestions on what types of teams to play in the non-conference. So I would say we have a limited advisory capacity in the non-conference, but that really is the schools kind of figuring out what they want to do and why, and scheduling those teams. Now, as it comes to the conference matchups, so we have everything to do with that, you know, so we put those together. We try to figure out when the best times for certain teams to play, and try to build a schedule that's going to create some intrigue at the end of the season. You know, and sometimes we get it right, sometimes you get it wrong. You never know how those things are going to play out. And so maybe we could have another conversation in November and we can see if we did get it right or not. But we certainly try to anticipate what we think might be intriguing matchups and schedule them accordingly so they can go throughout the year, you know, from week to week.
You know, I know, for example, looking ahead, everyone's looking at that Marshall game, but there's so many Sun Belt teams right now that are undefeated. That James Madison game with App State is also intriguing because I think we're going to see a team that's just moved up and everyone's curious. Because we've had some people, we do a call-in show on other nights, and we've had App State fans come on. And one of the things we did was just sort of talk through the schedule, and it was just so intriguing to see these potential matchups. And, of course, as you said, by the way, and we everyone keeps talking about the wins, but UNC got two major scares at App State. And I think lesser noticed at Georgia State this past weekend because there were so many great wins for the conference. The depth is there. The Sun Belt seems to have a level of depth that should benefit the conference overall. Of course, the flip side is hopefully not cannibalize itself, which, you know, Pac-12 is notorious for decades. I mean, and actually I want to kind of change gears to James Madison. You were the athletic director at Richmond for 5 years, and prior to that you were at American U. That contribute to having a better understanding of James Madison, which is obviously not that far away, when you were looking at them for conference membership?
Yeah, you know, certainly, you know, my familiarity with James Madison was super helpful, at least to me, understanding who they were and certainly their potential for this conference, just because when I was at Richmond, really at American and Richmond, we played them a lot. But when I was at Richmond, we played them pretty much everything. And so I was on that campus at least a couple times a year. They were maybe our biggest football rival, maybe William and Mary, between those two. So I was very familiar. I've known Jeff Bourne for a really long time. So I do think those things were certainly helpful in terms of me already having a good understanding of the potential impact of JMU, but also having a relationship with Jeff Bourne so that I could just call him and talk to him about, you know, realignment and what they're thinking and those things. So I certainly think that made things much easier for us in terms of those conversations and that relationship kind of moving forward. And I'll tell you, so I was at James Madison's first game when they played Middle Tennessee, and, you know, they scored, you know, 44 points. I think that final score was 44-7. You know, they beat Middle. And so, you know, as a transitioning school, you're kind of like, all right, what does that mean? But then Middle goes out, you know, this week and beats Colorado State 34-19. So I think to the point you're making, you know, James Madison's for real. You know, they had a really good quarterback. They're really good in the skill spots. They're good up front as well. So, you know, that App game, I think they play App maybe on September 24th or maybe the week after, maybe it's October 1st. But it's coming up in a couple weeks, and that's going to be a fun game. And there's going to be a host of other ones, you know, great games throughout the conference, throughout the season.
I think one of the interesting things about the impact of realignment for the Sun Belt is that, you know, it's kind of unique. When it comes to your conference championship game, you actually play it at the schools. And now we're talking about CFP expansion and having games for that at the schools. What's it like getting to see, you know, a team be rewarded with getting to host a game like that? And obviously Boone has been a popular site so far, but, you know, there's so many teams that are in the running for it potentially this year. What's it like when a team gets to host that and seeing the reaction from the students and from the players at that host school?
You know, I think it's great. You know, I mean, it's a great reward to a great season. You know, I mean, when you think about when you host the conference championship, particularly one in football on your campus, it's like a 3-hour infomercial. You know, you get your marks on TV, your brand, your fans, your students, your band, all that good stuff. So I think it's great for our schools. The exposure is incredible. You think about our time slot, you know, usually we're on ESPN right in that kind of 3:30 Eastern time slot for our championship game. So it's a prime college football viewing space. And so I think that our fans get excited about it. I think our teams get excited about it. I think it's one of the good things about our championship. You know, people ask me all the time, are you going to move it to a neutral site? I was like, I don't think so. I mean, one, if it's not broken, don't fix it type deal. But also, I think it's such a great opportunity, you know, for those schools and such a great reward that, you know, that I think it works really well. And you can see that, you know, when we've been at App, it's been really great for them. Last year, we were at Louisiana, you know, to your point. This year, who knows where we'll be? You know, we could be at a new school like Marshall. We certainly could be at App. We could be Georgia State or Coastal. Could be at Louisiana. And I'm going to tell you, you know, keep your eye on that South Alabama UCLA game this week. You know, I mean, South Alabama looked great against Central Michigan, and certainly, you know, won their game in week one as well. So, so it's a wide open thing, and I think we're excited about that. And I think the point you make about cannibalization is, you know, obviously you don't want to do that, but it's a good problem to have if you have a lot of good teams. So I think we'd like to take our chances with having a lot of great teams that certainly could beat up on each other, but are really quality teams that are going to win a lot of non-conference games than the alternative.
Commissioner, I know when you have a lot of good teams, you also get a really good TV deal. And I know you have a very close relationship with ESPN, and you were able to get this new huge extension with, you know, new linear expansions for not just football, but sports in general for the Sun Belt across the ESPN family, ESPN Plus, on the standard ESPN channels. What has been the impact of this new media deal that y'all signed through 2031?
You know, I think it's tremendous. You know, like when I think back to the weekend that we just had, or even the weekend that we had week two in 2020, what's important about that is the exposure. You know, so, you know, the Marshall's win over Notre Dame was in front of 3 million people on NBC, right? You know, App's win over Texas A&M was 1 million plus people, and it was on ESPN too. You know, and so you've got these games that are on national TV. And so our partnership with ESPN is key in terms of giving us the platform to talk about, you know, how good we are as a conference, to show what we can do from a football standpoint, and to provide a level of support and exposure that allows us to grow our brand. So I can't speak highly enough about ESPN and our relationship with them, and just, you know, how much of a partner they've been as we've grown and developed. And without that exposure, you know, I'm probably not talking to you on Reddit because no one would know, right? And because ESPN, you know, our games are on ESPN, our broadcasts are on ESPN, I think that allows people to know who we are and give us opportunities to kind of grow our brand and let people, you know, kind of peek under the curtain a little bit about who the Sun Belt is and all the good things that we're doing.
You know, starting, I mean, for a long time, Sun Belt was a strong advocate of a 12-team college football playoff with the top six conference champions and the top six at large teams. Now we've got it. So how is that, you know, what has that been like to see the thing you've been a big fighter for come to fruition in a few years from now?
Yeah, you know, I think it's been great and frustrating. So I'll give you the frustrating part, which is, it shouldn't have taken this long to get to this point, right? You know what I mean? So that's disappointing. And the fact that we wasted a lot of time has really put us under the gun now of trying to get it implemented early. And I'm hopeful that we still can get it implemented before the end of the deal so that we can have that format early. But it's going to be much harder because we essentially wasted 12 months, you know, and then now we got there. On the positive side, though, I say better late than never. We're in a really good spot that we're really excited about. And I think it's good for college football in the sense of the regular season, I think, is going to be more exciting. There are going to be more teams now that are going to be in consideration for the playoffs. Like when we looked at it as a CFP management committee, you know, it was, you know, in the current format, like six teams are being discussed for playoff potential in November. Whereas under the new format, we're going to have all more than 30 teams that potentially could make the playoffs in discussion. So I think all that's going to make the season exciting. And then I think specifically for the Sun Belt, you know, and I think Saturday really shows this, all we're looking for is an opportunity. You know, we want to compete against the best. We want to be able to compete against the national championship. I don't believe that the current system really gives us a realistic shot of kind of breaking through and getting to the CFP. But this new system does, and it's not perfect, but I think it's a great change. And I think for our conference, there's going to be a lot of benefits because it really does create access. It really builds more of a meritocracy so that when we win and have success, we'll have a chance to compete for a national championship, which is the way it is in all the other sports that we sponsor, you know, through kind of the NCAA. And so it's nice to take another step closer to that so that our student athletes and our coaches, our teams, and our institutions will legitimately start camp at the beginning of August and know they have a legitimate shot to compete for a conference championship in December and then a national championship after that. That's a good feeling.
I know you've been talking about structuring schedules and structuring how the conference is designed to be a format that's best for the college football playoff. And now that we know this, you said you'd also be open, of course, to making changes if you need to. Have you seen, now that you're going to 12 teams, are you confident in how the conference is set up now in terms of scheduling, in terms of planning, or do you foresee adjustments necessary to better position Sun Belt teams to break into that expanded playoff field?
You know, we feel pretty good about our approach, you know. And so I think when you look at it, there's these two schools of thought of, you know, when you get to the championship games, you know, a lot of the reasons the conferences have gotten rid of their divisions is because they're trying to get their two best teams in the championship game. And so we'll just have to see, and we'll have to monitor whether not having divisions and going with just your top two teams or having divisions and going with the top teams from divisions, if one of those impacts our access. And obviously if we evaluate and determine that a change is needed, we're certainly open to do that. But we are committed to the regional aspect. We're committed to the divisional aspect. But we obviously don't want to be obtuse. And if there is any data that shows us that making a change might be different. I think from a scheduling standpoint, it'll be interesting to see. You know, we've got a couple of things. You know, scheduling kind of works in two ways. You know, you've got your choices, but then other people's choices could impact you as well. So, for instance, if, you know, some of the conferences that we play in the non-conference increase the number of conference games they play, well, then that's less non-conference games. And so we just have to see how that impacts our ability to get the games we want in the non-conference, because there may be less games out there, and the games that are out there may not be the ones that we want to play. And if that happens, then that may necessitate us deciding we want to play more conference games. And then obviously there's a trickle down effect from that. So I would say that for me, you know, we've got a plan. Our goal is really to execute it, but we do need to be flexible just because this is an ecosystem, you know, and we don't get to just act unilaterally without impacts, and other conferences don't get to act unilaterally without impacts on other conferences. And so if we see those downstream impacts, and we see things that, you know, we might need to make an adjustment to so that we're better positioned, we're certainly willing to do that. But as I talk to you today, we feel really good about being in divisions. We feel really good about regional play. We feel really good about where we're set up. And we think we're well positioned for when the CFP expands to be, you know, kind of a regular participant in that postseason championship.
On the subject of those downstream effects, have you already had some thoughts, some plans, discussions about the impact that an expanded playoff could have on bowl bids, bowl tie-ins with the various conferences? If there's an option for the Sun Belt to maybe make some new partnerships with other bowls, because as we know, in the CFP era, the Sun Belt is actually the winningest conference. I believe it's a 6-4-9 winning percentage since the dawn of the CFP in 2014. So obviously exciting matchups in the bowl season for the Sun Belt, and they've done very well in them. Are we going to get to see some maybe new faces and some new bowls for the conference?
Yeah, you know, absolutely. And it's interesting, you know, we haven't really waited for CFP expansion to already start working on bowls, just because, you know, our all of our bowl agreements were created when we had 10 teams, and now we've got 14, you know? And so minimally you're trying to have, you know, enough bowl agreements for 50% of your membership, if not more. And so obviously we've got five tie-ins right now, and we've got 14 members. So, and I'm not a math major, but that's not 50%. So we've already started kind of working. And so we're hopeful that we can figure some things out even for this season. I think to your question, which is a little more of a longer term look, I think that's absolutely right. So we're trying to figure out right now, who do we want to play? Who do we want to partner with in the bowl structure? So that we can make sure that we're going to have those opponents. And so I certainly think we'll have some new bowl opportunities when we do kind of our new agreements. And I think they're going to be really exciting. So I think that's a great aspect. I think for us, the bowl system is really important, you know, because no matter how successful we are, we're not going to get 7, 8, 9 teams in the CFP. And I think those postseason experiences are really important for our students and for our coaches and for our teams. And so a healthy bowl system is important. The Sun Belt is certainly committed to supporting that and certainly identifying, you know, some additional partners so that we can expand our bowl kind of partnerships so that we can accommodate, you know, 7, 8, 9 of our teams when they're bowl eligible and deserving.
You know, one thing that's unique to the Sun Belt, or at least one of the things that sets it apart that we've talked about, are the willingness to play with some of these scheduling games that are midweek, which they're sort of that push and pull. Not as easy for the home teams to necessarily have a bunch of fans come and pack the stadium on, say, you know, like a Wednesday. But how valuable are those midweek games to the conference? And are they, I mean, because obviously we enjoy watching them, you know, here at RCFB. We know they have a cult following among passionate college football fans and generalists. And I'm now sort of answering my own question, but could you speak to the value of those
games? You answered it really well. It was a great answer. So, you know what? They're really valuable, you know, and part of the reason is, you know, like, obviously football traditionally is played on Saturday. I love Saturday football. I love watching as much football as I can, game after game. But that's the issue. You know, you're one of many on Saturday. The great thing about playing a Thursday night game or a Friday night game is that you're generally the only show in town. And if there's something else going on, there's one or two other games. And usually they're not even opposite you. They're in a different kind of time or TV window. So, you know, having the stage to yourself on those midweek games, I think is very, very valuable. I think we've learned a lot from that. I think some of the highest rated football games on TV are on Friday night. You know, I mean, when you look at those ESPN ratings, and that's helpful for us, you know, if we can have a million viewers watching one of our games, that's a good thing, you know, and on Saturday, it's a little harder just because there is so much football on Saturday across a whole host of channels. So I think the midweek games are an important part of what we do. It's an important part of who we are. I think it's an important part of how we showcase ourselves and get the exposure that we want out of our TV package and from our network partner, ESPN. So I think we're committed to doing them. We're also committed to expanding our Saturday offerings. You know, I think the goal is balance is what we seek, you know? So we're trying to make sure that none of our schools have to play too many midweek games. You know, but if you have to play one or two during the season, that's not too many to get that exposure. And then obviously, you know, we want the bulk of the schedule to be on Saturday so that people can enjoy that traditional football experience of, you know, tailgating and watching the bands come in and all the things, you know, because football is an event, you know, it's not really a game. And midweek, it's hard to do it the way kind of football is designed to be done. You know, you're really rushing in from work or rushing in from class, getting to the game and watching the game, you know. But if you can play on Saturday, you know, it's that more traditional experience where you're bringing out the grill and the tailgate and the football. And, you know, you're out there for, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 hours. And so we're trying to find the balance. But midweek is really important. It's been really helpful to the exposure of the league. I think it's an important part of what we do and who we are. And I don't see that ever going away from us. But also the Saturday's key, and we'll continue to grow on Saturdays in terms of our TV, our linear TV opportunities too.
Commissioner, we want to respect your time. We know you may have to take off. We've been going for about 30 minutes. We always have more questions for you. And if you have more time, we'll be happy to ask. Just wanted to check in with you first.
Yeah, no, I certainly have a few more minutes. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, and for those of you listening, this is RCFB Talk 74. We're joined by Sun Belt Commissioner Keith Gill, and we're talking all things about the Rising Belt and the success it's seen, especially this past weekend, which, as we said, was not atypical. That's not something that we haven't seen before. You know, on a general sort of topic that's all of us have been talking about in college football, how do you think NIL has gone after that first full year?
You know, I think it's kind of clunky. You know, I wouldn't say it's bad. I wouldn't say it's good. I think it's a good opportunity for student athletes. And so I'm excited that they have the opportunity to earn money on their name, image, and likeness. But I don't know that the implementation and the execution has been great just because the inconsistencies haven't been helpful to the system. You know, I think it's, you know, being used as recruiting inducement, which I don't think is a good thing for college sports. And so I think if there's a way that we can tweak it and clean it up a bit so that it's consistent across the board, then I would be really I'd be more excited about it in terms of its implication. So I think I'm really excited about the concept, not so excited about the current implementation and how it's working. But I'm optimistic that we're going to be able to learn from these mistakes and hopefully get it cleaned up a bit so that we allow the student athletes these great opportunities that they see, but not in a way that is kind of exploitive and impacts the recruiting. And the other piece I would say, the last piece, and this is, you know, I want to make sure that we don't build a system that's so transactional that we take the emphasis off the degree and the education. Because at the end of the day, for most student athletes, they aren't going to earn like life-changing money that they can retire on. And the degree is still the most important thing that we provide to any student. And I think that education, that degree is important. And I don't want that to be diluted by name, image, likeness, or any of the other kind of transactional elements that are kind of coming into the business. I just want those things to complement the education and the degree.
I think you've got kind of an interesting background that is pertinent to this discussion, because for the listeners who don't know, obviously you played running back as a walk-on, I believe, at Duke.
Yes.
And based on some past comments, you were very upfront and realistic about your prospects for going pro in athletics. And like you said, focused on the degree and what that could do for you going forward. Not all commissioners have that background. So is there a part of that viewpoint that you're able to bring into this discussion with your peers, and also when you're talking with your member schools about the rules you want to put in place, that the impact that it can have to benefit student athletes, but also kind of help them get on the right path to make the most of these opportunities without, you know, hurting themselves in the future?
Yeah, you know, well, when they see my leather helmet, I lose a little bit of credibility because they realize how long ago I played. But I do think having been in the system is helpful. You know, it just gives you a set of experiences that that are unique and that others may not have. And so I do think being a student athlete is helpful. Being a football student athlete is helpful. I've been in a locker room and been with teammates and all those good things. And I certainly do try to bring that to my approach. You know, I like to think that I'm student athlete focused and certainly focused on, you know, trying to help them with their, just achieving all their goals, you know? And so, I mean, I think my other commissioner colleagues and everyone I work with are focused, you know, in the same way. I just think we all come at it a little differently. It's amazing for student athletes because I do think they get so many opportunities now, you know, things that certainly when I play, we could only, you know, dream of in terms of, you know, the myriad. I mean, they have like multiple helmets now. I'm like, multiple helmets? I mean, I can't even believe that, you know? I mean, it's like, you know, so it's just amazing how football has evolved, and hopefully it continues to evolve. Because I do think it's an important part of our culture and the fabric of who we are. So I certainly think being a student athlete helps my perspective. I certainly think being a football student athlete at Duke helps my perspective. And I certainly try to bring that to really any problem or any issue that we have so that I can be student athlete centric and try to think about it from, hey, you know, when I was kind of doing this, although it was a long time ago, you know, what kind of perspective would I have appreciated? And I think that does help me in my decision making.
You know, I've been meaning to ask, because when I was looking at the times you were at Duke, you were there right after Stephen Spurrier left. Was the old ball coach at all an influence in what led you to want to be a Blue Devil?
You know what, I'll say yes and no. So that staff recruited us all the way up until, so essentially Steve Spurrier's first year at Florida was my first year at Duke. So that staff recruited us up until the bowl game. And then after the bowl game, then they all went to Duke. So, so yes, I mean, there was some influence there, but I was going to go to Duke regardless of whether Coach Spurrier was there or not. And the reason was, you know, my kind of evaluation was I was going to go to the best academic school I could go to with the highest level of football I could play, you know? So, and so that really was me. I was looking at Ivy League schools as well. And so when I had the opportunity to go to Duke, that was perfect because I could play football in the ACC and obviously get a good education. So I was a little less kind of coach influenced, but obviously, you know, that recruiting aspect of it was important. I mean, having Coach Spurrier there would have been unbelievable. So I ended up playing with his son. So Stevie Jr. was actually one of my teammates. So I got one of the Spurriers, but not the old ball coach.
You know, and I have to say, it's wonderful when you hear folks who meet their partners in college. Because I know you met your partner, Dr. Tiffany Speaks, while you were both at Duke, correct?
Yes. Yeah, at a bus stop on Central Campus. So.
Oh, that's wild. Oh, that's wonderful. And you two have like seven degrees between you two, by the way. I mean, if you actually sit down and look at it.
You both they're all Duke.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Duke,
that really
Stanford,
hurt.
Columbia, and Vandy. That's a murderer's row of intelligence right there. When I went through it, I'm like, oh my gosh. And a doctor of education from Vanderbilt. That's like one of the that's not, you know, for those who out there who don't know, that is Vandy's probably best graduate school at an academically prestigious university. In addition to, you know, Stanford and Columbia. But wow, that you guys must have really, that's got to be intense. I can't even imagine. Like, I'm married to someone who's also got a graduate degree like I do, and it leads to some intense conversations and intellectual challenges, intellectual brutality sometimes. But
great thing about it is I'm going to start having you be my PR person because I never thought about doing it that way. Between us, we have 6 degrees. So that way, all of her hard work, I can subsume as though I did something, you know? So I'm going to thank you for that because I'm going to start using that in terms of, together we have 6 degrees. So I think that's awesome.
Oh my goodness. I love it. You know, and one thing I've been meaning to ask, because obviously you decided to move into administration or at least move into sort of a lot of these areas within, still staying within college sports. What led you, I know initially your approach was to take an NCAA internship. What led you to do that?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. So it's really interesting. So when I was, Duke's a liberal arts school, and which is unbelievable. But like at the time, I don't know that I really understood what all that meant. I just knew Duke was a good school. So I went to Duke. And so I go to my academic advisor. I'm like, well, I majored in history and sociology. What am I going to do with this degree? You know, and he kind of asked me a bunch of questions, kind of like, well, do you like doing this, that, you know, and he actually ended up saying, well, why don't you do what I do? And I was like, what do you do? And he kind of explained it to me. That was really the first time I realized there was all this infrastructure that supported our ability to play. And so I was like, okay, there's this whole like industry there. And he gave me the application for the NCAA internship. And one of the great things is, you know, you were talking about, you know, my wife, Tiffany, and how smart she is. She helped me with my essay for the internship, you know, because she is really smart, as you said, and really focused on education. And I was able to get that internship at the NCAA. And that's how I got started. So it really was a conversation with my academic advisor. And then it kind of morphed into it. And I do think, to me, it's a lesson of, you know, if you find something that you really love and that you're passionate about, you know, then, you know, going to work is going to be really easy. And that's what this is for me. You know, it really is a labor of love. And I stumbled into it. It's not like I grew up dreaming I wanted to work in college athletics. But all the things that I do now are things that I would already do anyways. You know, I would spend my whole Saturday watching football, whether I worked as the commissioner of the Sun Belt Conference or not. You know, I would read all these things about college football, whether I was a Sun Belt commissioner or not. So, and so that's great. You know, when you can blend those passions together, I think that that's a really, really good thing. And I'm lucky enough that I've done that.
I think you just described what a lot of us would consider a dream job of, you know, getting paid to watch football and being able to visit the schools and, you know, be up in the boxes, be on the sidelines week after week. It sounds like a phenomenal experience. But
except on Mondays when they're yelling at you about the officiating. But it's great on Saturdays.
I guess it comes with the territory. You've had a bit of a groundbreaking career, the first African-American commissioner of an FBS conference. Obviously, Kevin Warren now has joined you in that prestigious rank since you were hired. But in an interview that you gave in the past, you talked about being able to look up to other administrators and see them as role models, as trailblazers. Now you're in that position yourself. What advice can you give to, you know, listeners who are wanting to go down that route, or, you know, trying to go somewhere where there isn't a clear trailblazer already there and they kind of have to make their own way?
Yeah, you know, just to persevere, you know, and that you can do it. I mean, I think that's really the important thing, is just having the confidence to know that you actually can get there. And, you know, I just think about it, you know, if I can get there, then, you know, really anybody can. And so I do think it's important, though, to persevere. There's going to be some bumps along the way, just because, you know, life's not linear. Life's not smooth. Life is actually a grind, right? And so some of the things that you want to have happen will happen. Sometimes it won't. But sometimes some things that you want to have happen that don't happen are actually a good thing for you, you know? And sometimes you got to trust the closed door, because it might have saved you from something that wasn't as good. So I just think, you know, try to work as hard as you can, persevere, understand there's going to be some challenges. I also think lean on people. You know, I mean, one of the things that I feel like I'm fortunate enough is I've got a lot of mentors. I've got a lot of folks that I'm willing to call and ask questions. You know, try to be as collaborative as you can, because you don't have all the answers and you're not expected to. But, you know, but there's a lot of people around you that can help you in that regard. So, but I do think working hard, persevering, and understand, and just having the confidence that you can do it is actually key, you know, because there's just going to be moments where you're just wondering, like, oh, can I really do this? Because you got punched in the face by something that happened, which always happens, no matter what you're doing. And, you know, because the margin between winning and losing is always super narrow. You know, like after the fact, when we write the stories and we talk about it, you know, you always talk about it like one team dominated the other. But if you think about it, you know, and using a football metaphor, it's probably like five plays. You know, you change five plays in a game and the other team probably wins. Now, not all the time if you're beating a team by 70. And so, and I think life is the same way. Like a lot of times when you quote unquote fail and don't do something you're trying to do, you didn't miss it by very much, you know? So keep the faith, try again, keep trying, you know, and eventually it's going to work out for you.
Well, Commissioner, we really appreciate the time you've taken this morning to speak with us. I guess I just, as kind of a final question, you know, we'd love to know what should we look forward to see from the Sun Belt as we're heading forward? What would you have the audience take away about, you know, you just had this huge weekend, but there's still a lot of the season to be played, not just in football and other sports. Obviously, I wish we had time to get into the success of Sun Belt in baseball, softball, men's soccer, all of that stuff. But how should folks... I mean, how would you like to frame this to people as we head to the rest of the season?
Yeah, you know what? So I think the way I would like to frame it is, we've got a lot of great football programs that are going to play a lot of compelling games. So our season is going to be a really interesting, compelling, exciting season. So I would encourage everyone to, you know, buckle up, get your popcorn out, and watch as much kind of Sun Belt football as you can, because I think you're going to see a great product, great quality football, compelling stories, and fun games.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Commissioner. It was a pleasure speaking with you this morning. Hopefully we'll get a chance to touch base again later, maybe in November. Maybe we'll be talking about the matchup between App State and Marshall, which, you know, could be one of the greatest of the season. We'll see. But obviously there's plenty of other great games before that. Thanks so much. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks. I love being on, so love to be back. So I appreciate it, and thanks for your time.
And thanks to all of you who've listened to us. This was RCFB Talk 74. On behalf of myself, Bob Akaiheri, on behalf of my co-hosts, J.D. Moore and Sirius, thank you for joining us. We hope you have a great day and enjoy another wonderful week of college football. Now, on the hang up and listen.